Rob.
His name is Rob.
He knows his Wookiees from his Daleks. Listen now.
Listen now.
Hear the Force challenge the TARDIS. Get your blue milk and jelly babies while we see which drives you crazy. Star Wars or Doctor Who.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Who Wars, episode number 42. You know, we are the podcast for those among us who just can't decide between Star Wars and Doctor Who, and I'm your host, Rob Irwin. How are you? If you're a new listener, I do have bad news. This is actually our final episode of Who Wars, so you've joined us at both an exciting and sad time, and, well, I guess there's 41 other episodes to go back through if you're really in the mood to, so there's that. For those of you who have listened to Who Wars for some time, you'll remember in our last episode a few months back, I telegraphed that in the new year I'd be dropping Who Wars and concentrating on Doctor Who as a podcasting subject, and that's still true. We'll be debuting the Doctor Who show later this month. I think January 31 is the date I've penciled in for that. And over the past few months, you've had the Doctor Who review show put together by one of our contributors, Andy. He produced that, and I was happy to contribute to it, and I hope you enjoyed that too. So here we are, in the final episode. I don't know what to say. Well, actually, I do know what to say, because I've jotted a few notes down here in front of myself. And I guess the first thing is, I won't go over all the reasons why I'm giving up on Star Wars fandom and the whole marketing side of things and podcasting and so on, you know. But suffice to say, for those of you who don't go back and listen to episode 41, as we got closer to The Force Awakens, I just became, I don't know what the word is for it, turned off, sickened. No, sickened is probably too strong a word. But I was just over the whole hype around Star Wars. And I know that's weird to say as a Star Wars fan. I mean, I've been a Star Wars fan since, well, I saw Empire Strikes Back at the age of 5 in 1980, but I knew of it before then. I even had action figures before then because I had an older brother who had seen the first film. And so almost by osmosis, I was into Star Wars even before I'd seen Star Wars, if that makes sense. So I am a massive Star Wars fan, and Star Wars has always had a hype machine behind it. But I don't know, maybe because it had been gone, you know, for 10 years. Well, we had some TV shows and so on, but in terms of a movie franchise, it had been gone for 10 years. And just seeing it all come back and seeing the toys start up again and seeing the clickbait stories online and people debating the tiniest little things, it was just like, is this for me? And I just wasn't sure that it was. I'm still not sure that it is. You know, I've joined in a few debates since The Force Awakens came out because I think there are some interesting topics to talk about from it. But on the whole, it's something that I'm beyond. I'm not even sure I'm going to read any of the new novels anymore. I mean, I collected all of and read all of the old extended universe of Star Wars. That's fairly esoteric knowledge these days. You talk to people who claim to be big Star Wars fans about things that happened in the extended universe, they have no idea what you're talking about. And you're like, oh yeah, but you know, when such and such happened, and you suddenly realize you're talking about something that happened in a book that wasn't read by that many fans, relatively speaking, 20 years ago. And it's probably, you know, no surprise that a fan who might only be 20 years old themselves, maybe 25, hasn't read it because it came out when they were born. But I digress. I remain a Star Wars fan. I've got the Star Wars X-Wing game and the Armada game out on my tabletop at the moment, with it being the Christmas holidays here. And all that good stuff, but I just don't think I can summon the energy to really, really get into it. And I think to do a podcast, you've got to really, really be into it. And that's why I stopped doing it. So although I wasn't going to give a long explanation, I probably just did. Anyway, that's the nature of me talking at the start of these shows, isn't it? What else? I guess, yes, I will say yes, it's ironic that just as it looks like Doctor Who only has one episode next year, I think most of us are thinking there'll only be a Christmas episode, while meanwhile Star Wars is just going from strength to strength, going absolutely nuts, and there'll be more Star Wars than anything around the traps next year. That there's an irony that I'm taking my podcasting direction in the direction of the show that, you know, might not have a lot to say next year, whereas for Star Wars there'd be tons to say. But it's all about the grassroots to me. This is something Andy will talk about later in the show. You'll hear when, I'm sure. And it's something that I've spoken about many times on the podcast in general in terms of being a grassroots podcast. Because I know Doctor Who is big. I know it's sold all around the world and all of that good stuff. But compared to Star Wars, it's not that big, you know, and it still feels like a bit of a cottage industry to me. Especially, you know, I just spoke about the Star Wars books 20 years ago. Well, 20 years ago in Doctor Who, we were in the middle of what they call the wilderness years. And I remember where the whole show was hanging on, you know, what was written in the Virgin New Adventures and later the BBC Eighth Doctor Adventures by largely a bunch of budding, at the time, fan fiction authors. You know, there are names in there like Paul Cornell and Russell T Davies and stuff, but they weren't the Paul Cornells and Russell T Davies of today. You know, and you had this group of people, Kate Orman from here in Australia, collaborating on this wonderful series of New Adventures and then Eighth Doctor Adventures. And that was Doctor Who. And these novels weren't printed in huge quantities. You know, you had to be fairly committed to be reading them. And truth be told, I've not read all the NAs. But I think that used to just really highlight to me how much of a cottage industry Doctor Who was. I mean, you grow up with it in the 70s and 80s and the wobbly sets and, you know, the low-budget nature of it. That feels fairly grassroots. Then you go through that long wilderness period where it's entirely grassroots and it's all about fanzines and novels. You know, they're not even doing Big Finish audios at the time I'm talking about. It was quite an interesting time. And even now that the show's back and has a bigger budget and is shown all around the world and has become very, very popular and particularly gained popularity with women as well as men. It used to be a fairly blokey kind of place. Now it's a 50-50 split. You know, the show has changed quite a lot, but it still gives me that grassrootsy kind of vibe, that cottage industry kind of vibe. I really can't describe it any better than that. So, that's the kind of thing I'm interested in, and even though it might not be that entirely anymore, it still feels that way to me, and that's, I think, why I gravitate more towards Doctor Who in terms of this kind of fandom, in terms of wanting to reach out and talk to other fans. The Star Wars fandom started to feel, and still feels, a bit weird to me in places. Some of the debates that people get into, it's not quite to the level of Star Trek fandom, if I can put it that way, but it's getting close, and I think the bigger something is, the more undesirable people end up in fandom. So I think by its very nature, Star Wars being so much bigger, there are more undesirable people floating around and you're more likely to come across them in that fandom. Anyway, let's get off that. There'll be plenty of time for me to talk later in the episode. I'm going to be talking to our main contributors and I'll have a big summary at the end of the episode. So let me just say up front here, this is sad. You know, and it's not sad. It's sad because there's a finality to Who Wars. You know, it's ending here. I won't be making it anymore. That is sad. But it's not sad because, you know, with the monthly Doctor Who show coming, Lex is still going to be doing her comic book stuff, and Andy and Kate will be back as roving reporters, tossing in anything they like. Andy might even pick up a regular segment that I've got in mind for him. We've just got to see how our time's going now that he's doing a Top Geek and other things as well. So basically, the whole team will still be working together later this month and throughout 2016. There's no sense of, oh my God, after this episode, I'll never speak to these people again or work with them again. So, although this episode does look back in places and, you know, although the success of Star Wars might leave you wondering why on earth I'm leaving Star Wars, it's all good. I think I've just explained why, and this episode is dedicated not just to the team who have made these 42 episodes and specials as well, but also to you, you know, out there, the listener. Thank you for being there for us, and we hope the Doctor Who fans among you stick with us for the new monthly show that starts later this month. Now, throughout this episode, I'll have our three key contributors, Kate, Lex, and Andy, answering questions about their time on the show. I thought it might be a nice way for them to talk about topics that otherwise wouldn't come up in their usual segments. Once I sat down and thought about it, I thought in my editorials and my outros of the show and stuff, I can sometimes talk about the show in general, but when, you know, Lex is doing a comic review or Kate's doing a convention review, it's not really a chance for them to talk about Who Wars or what they do on it or how they felt about it. So I've got a round of questions, and I'll play them throughout the show, and it might give you a taste for how those guys, our key contributors, felt about being here on Who Wars. So, without any further ado, let's kick off with some of that. The question is, to the three of you, what interested you about Who Wars? Why did you want to be a part of it? And let's start with you, Lex.
Well, I believe I wanted to be part of it because, well, I was an English major as an undergraduate. And as an English major, one gets used to discussing all sorts of literature and whatnot, you know, various forms of media that change the way that a person thinks, inspire certain feelings, and might even change the world. You know, the basic, epic, everyday, great works of art, I guess you could say. So, yeah, I was an English student. I enjoy discussing things I'm passionate about. And Who Wars definitely includes two things that I am passionate about, Star Wars and Doctor Who. Yeah, I think that pretty much concludes it. It was very exciting to be on a podcast also. You know, there's something about being able to turn thoughts into a more concrete format, something that can be reviewed over and over and shown to many other people. You know, it's I guess I like the connection of it and the tangibility of it.
Thank you, Lex. Over to you, Kate.
From the start, Who Wars was something that really caught my eye and intrigued me. It took two of my favorite fandoms, Star Wars and Doctor Who, and mashed them together. And who doesn't love a good mashup? So, in addition, I had been listening to podcasts for a long time, and so when I actually got an opportunity to take an active role in being a contributor to one, I really jumped at that opportunity, and it's taken me to places I never would have dreamed of, and I will always be grateful to Who Wars for that. I've come a long way from just submitting a little 4-minute review to actually interviewing some really cool, interesting people, and to going out on the scene and reporting on things, and I owe that all to Who Wars.
All right, and let's round things out with Andy.
I spent a year on a podcast that was just talking about Doctor Who, and I was aware that that was winding down for me as a presenter. I wanted to continue podcasting, but I didn't really want to go into another solely Doctor Who one. And one of the podcasts I've been listening to was Who Wars, because I like Star Wars and I like Doctor Who. And I loved the concept of it. And I sort of pitched some ideas to Rob. And he said, well, thanks a lot, but I'd like you to do these. And he gave me some things to do. But, you know, that he lets you do things in your own way. And there's lots of freedom. And it's exciting. Really exciting. We're stood here in the foyer of one of our local cinemas there at, well, it's 11 p.m. and we're going to 1 minute past midnight showing of Star Wars, which is really exciting. There's a lot of blokes of a similar age here to me who also look a bit like me. Not many girls here. There's a young lady selling BB-8 drinking straws and posters and 3D glasses who's got Princess Leia hair buns in, which is brilliant. She won't let me take a selfie for some reason. In fact, she says if I try again that I'll get through by security. But anyway, we're going to go in and get our seats now and we'll talk to you in a bit. Okay, well, sat in the cinema now. I've put my favourite seats, which is the front row. And people always say, why do you sit on the front row? It's stupid, you know, sit further back. No, you might as well watch telly if you sit further back. It's great, there's a railing you put your feet up on. Got my feet up, I've got my popcorn already, and I'm really excited. Sorry, love, you tear that fern off. Hmm? Your fern, we know what you're up to. Well, no, honestly, I'm recording a podcast. Yeah, they all said that, love. There's a hell of a lot of podcasts about Star Wars, if that's what's going on. No, it's just turn it off. Right. I'm going to put this away and I'll speak later. Right, well, that's it. We've just seen Star Wars The Force Awakens. I'm not going to talk about it now because there's a lot of things going through my head. I'm genuinely got a drop jaw, and I won't tell you why. I'm going to walk home now. It's raining, and also it's 3 a.m. in a local shopping centre full of geeks and nerds, which is great. It looks like a zombie apocalypse film, so I'm just going to admire that for a minute. In fact, this shopping centre's never been this full. Shame the shops aren't open, really. I was just saying, there's a few people did come in costume, which is always good fun. But the one, hats off to the, but two hats off, one to the guy Kermit's Tom Baker, the Fourth Doctor, and an even bigger hat off to the bloke who's come dressed as a Ghostbuster. Not sure what's going on there. Anyway, see you, talk later for the review. Okay, well, it's later. I'm not sure. Well, you know, this is the last item I'm doing for Who Wars, and, you know, a lot of my things about Who Wars, as we'll chat about, I'm sure at some point, have been autobiographical, and this is going to be no different, really, because I think what I've got to say about the film, I think there's two versions of the review of the film out there, and, well, I've just fallen into one of those categories, I think, so it's probably better to do something a little bit different, and I'm going to base this around a 9-year-old boy, which is me. In 1983, I was 9, and going to the cinema was a rare treat then. You know, it was birthdays, or maybe, you know, at the end of the summer holidays, or, you know, just it wasn't as regular as people tend to go now. And times were hard, the 70s and 80s, weren't they? They were in the UK, all them things, innit? But so I was 9, and I was the first person in my class at school to go and see Return of the Jedi. And that's really bonkers, because, I'm going to just, you know, fess up here. I hadn't actually seen The Empire Strikes Back at that point. Yep, I know, really odd. And it gave me a bit of an odd gist on continuity. For me, I got bought a Darth Vader Star Wars figure for a birthday present, probably about 78, 79, 80, one of those birthdays. And I just loved the toys, and that's what they were for me. It's like when they found out Woody in Toy Story used to be on a TV series. For me, these were great toys. And yeah, because I was aware of the film, and I think it was maybe an annual lying around, and bubblegum cards I'd seen in the playground at school. But, you know, it was the toys and playing the games, and the fact that there were films attached to them was sort of like something that was a little bit miles away for me. And I saw Star Wars on telly when it came on, and of course I loved it. And for me, that was, you know, that was like, it was a nice, fully contained film. I couldn't see what a sequel could do. And so I just carried on playing with my toys, and as the new figures came out for Empire Strikes Back, Yoda and Bespin Guards, Lando, Lobot Imperial Guards, all sorts of things like that, I'd get them, and I'd just sort of be taken into my games and play. And I only really knew about films and what happened in the films from talking the playground. You know, this story about a strange sort of like kangaroo creature on a snowy planet being cut open and guts came out and Luke Skywalker got put in it. You know, that's the stuff of dreams for me. So anyway, Star Wars for me was the only chapter I had. And by the time Return of Jedi came along, I was a bit older and was buying stickers and books and anything to do with it. Anything I could get my hands on, I was lapping up. And we didn't have a video player, by the way. That's why I hadn't seen Empire Strikes Back. Okay? It wasn't like you could say and go and rent the video. No, we didn't have a video player until 1989 in my house. You know? It's one of them things. So don't backtrack now. Don't start complaining. Anyway, there was no internet and stuff like that. And you used to have to get your titbits from all sorts of other places. And my mum came in one day and she gave me her magazine, Woman's Realm or Woman's Own, something like that, which were very dull magazines full of dress patterns and knitting patterns and chutney recipes and a romantic story and articles about, at home with Larry Grayson and his llamas, stuff like that. And why have you given me this? And she said, well, look. And lo and behold, there was an article in it about Return of the Jedi. Not only that, but there was also a section of the novelisation. And this was well before the book or the film had come out. So I sat on the sofa in my front room and read this extract from the novelisation. It was all about when a mysterious bounty hunter called, well, we'll get onto this later, it's all called Bush or Boosh, I don't know, it's up to you which one you want to call it, who was Princess Leia in disguise, had gone to rescue a carbon frozen Han Solo. And so Han Solo's frozen, right? Well, he wasn't in Star Wars, but okay. I heard rumours that Empire Strikes Back ended up getting frozen, so yeah, okay, I'll buy that. So she's come to rescue this Han Solo, right? That was all okay, and she thawed him out, and it was great, and he collapsed. And then I got to this bit where it said, and then he said, "I'm not going anywhere with you. Who is this?" And the voice said, "Someone who loves you." And then it said they went into a deep, passionate kiss. I can see now why they put this in Woman's Magazine. This was the romantic story, wasn't it? This isn't the Star Wars we talked about in the playground school, okay? It was definitely very sexist, the bit we talked about in the playground at school, and it was the boy stuff. So I had no idea that during Empire Strikes Back, only Han and Leia had copped off. In my head, she was like, Luke was the hero, and she was the princess he rescued, and therefore they were going to live happily ever after. So I read this bit twice, and then my elder brother came in, of course he'd seen Empire Strikes Back, and I said, "Philip, it says here that she kissed him passionately on the lips. Who's she talking about? It says Han Solo. Have they made a mistake?" My voice was definitely just like that. And he said, no, it's definitely Han Solo. She copped off in the last film. And so that was sort of like a big eye-opener to me, and suddenly got interested in the continuity of the films and everything like that. But it was still me Star Wars toys that were my biggest love. And I think what I liked is when there was less films, there was more gaps, and there was just reference to little things like Clone Wars and Bounty Hunters. And sometimes the only thing you knew about the Bounty Hunters in The Empire Strikes Back, the fact they were called Zuckers, Forlom, Dengar, etc., was because it said on the back of the packet. They never recall that in the film. And you sort of, this whole, that sort of used to create these whole little stories and episodes outside the existing established universe. Some of the things had been mentioned. So like the building up to the Christmas that I got the Millennium Falcon, I played a little installment every night of the card game between Han and Lando, where he wins the Millennium Falcon. So I played out that little episode, and my brother used to smoke roll-up cigarettes, which he still does. He used to get it in these rectangular tins, and he used to give me the tins, and I used to sort of like knock up miniature sets for them to play. So I had that story going on, and I was buying Star Wars figures well after the films finished because I loved the toys so much. It was still a game to me. So even in 85, 86, I was buying those last few figures, you know, Anakin and this stormtrooper disguised Luke and Han, and having all sorts of good fun. I had a little story where Obi-Wan's Force Ghost came back and had a sort of, he had a civil war with Luke because Luke started a new Order of Jedi, you see, I was ahead of the game. But they had slightly different rules and regulations. So I used to get the silver, the grey spear that the Emperor's Royal Guard had, and he used to stick that in Luke's lightsaber socket, misses, and he had a longer lightsaber, and that was one of the things that the old Jedi didn't like, and they used to have the Force Ghost coming back going, "We will never accept a new Jedi as Luke." So that little story's going on. And then back to Bush / Boosh, the Princess Leia about her. I had it that Princess Leia actually killed, slaughtered and stole the identity of Boosh, the bounty hunter. And previous to that, she hung around in a little gang with Boba Fett, Zuckers, Dengar, etc., doing their own little jobs and things, goofy jobs. And I'll let you know now that Dengar, I absolutely expanded his character. He was a very posh, well-spoken English gent called Dennis Gar, and it was shortened to Dengar, and the armour was actually acted as sort of like gravitational burn type things, and if you take them off, his body was floppy and he'd fall down.
So yes, Dennis Garr fell on hard times and had to become a bounty hunter. Yeah, so that story was going on. And then, you'll like this, after, Revelation? I get those Dalek stories mixed up. The one where the Davros was in a box with his head under a glass jar one, the Colin Baker one anyway. I loved that bit of design, and I had this, got a little white cardboard box and a little plastic helmet off a Fisher-Price diving man. And I resurrected the Emperor, just his head, and had him in a little booth and had little wires coming out of him and stuff. I made my own figures as well, you see. So I had a plasticine one. I created the Hoth Jawa. Oh, yeah, that was good as well. It was like a cozy sitcom. I had Yoda living with a Jawa on Dagobah, who was just called Jawa, and it was like an Odd Couple type sitcom. And Yoda was actually quite nasty to Jawa. He used to be a bit nasty to him, really, now I think about it. He used to treat him real badly, sort of like a Robinson Crusoe thing, maybe. Or maybe like Tom Hanks and Wilson, I don't know.
Jawa, go and collect Twix for tea.
Yes, anyway, so there's some of the little extra sequels and prequels and Star Wars stories that I used to create. And so what else got this got to do with my review of The Force Awakens? The only thing that it's got to do with is exactly how I'll end the review, because I really don't have that much to say about the film that hasn't been said. I enjoyed it. I loved it. But to me, it didn't feel special enough. It felt more like a TV special or a TV miniseries. If they'd have said, Disney had said, right, we've bought Star Wars, we're just going to make money off the old films and merchandise, but we're going to give you some TV specials, and we've managed to get the cast together. Do you know, it effects-wise and things like that, is it any different from some of those, you know, HBO, Marvel series we get these days? It wasn't a jaw-dropping, amazing eye-fest for me, unfortunately. Tiny things that I knew would niggled me. Like, I really, one of my favourite things about my childhood is the 20th Century Fox fanfare, then that pause of silence, the long time ago in a galaxy far, far away caption, then the Star Wars fanfare. And that all felt a bit rushed at the beginning after the Lucasfilm logo. That didn't wash with me. The acting is sensational. Daisy Ridley is worth watching the film for on repeat. She's so good, and John Boyega, he's a talented fellow as well. I really, really, really love the acting. I can't fault it at all. Totally believable, totally fell for them. Absolute heroes. What I didn't like is the thing that a lot of people are saying, they took the best bits of Empire and Star Wars and Return of the Jedi, and even the backstory with Kylo Ren, I can't remember his name now. God, it's like the old days, isn't it? Bush, Kylo Ren. His backstory about him slaughtering the Trini Jedis. Like, yeah, just like Anakin. It was just like beats from all of the films, but slightly remixed with the plot twists, the family twists, the relationship of the light side and the dark side, the balance of the people in it. That's what I felt about the film, and that's really why I'm not going to say that much about it. But the reason I went and told you all those stories about when I was 9 is because my mate said to me, what did you think of the film then? And I told him exactly what I've just said there about the remix, and, you know, seen it before, really, and at least the prequels were an original story by the guy who created it. He didn't make it for the fans, and as me and Al Noah are always saying, you know, about Doctor Who, they don't make it for the fans will watch it, whatever. Make the story that needs to be told. But anyway, went off at a tangent again there. I said that to him, and he said, right, okay, if you were 9 years old, what would you think of the film? And I paused and I said, That's the best film I've ever seen. And there you go. There's my review. And yeah, it's a good film, isn't it? I'm always going to be of the notion that the original from 1977 is the best, and kept it that way from me. And I'll always have that, so that's good. So I'm just going to go with them and enjoy them. And the build up to it's been fantastic. And the toys, I'm loving them. BB-8, oof, he's good, isn't he? So there you go. That'll be me signing off then.
Alrighty, thank you, Andy. And I think that's probably a good example of the kind of feature Andy was referring to in his response to my question earlier with regard to briefs here at Who Wars. In theory, the feature is about Star Wars The Force Awakens, but the majority of it was spent talking about Star Wars action figures from the 80s. That's something both unexpected and I think delightful for people to listen to, because in the end, it still all ties back to being 9 years old and watching The Force Awakens today. And I think that's a great example of the kind of features we've done here at Who Wars, Andy in particular, over so many episodes and in so many ways. Anyway, it's time for another question for the team, speaking of questions. And this question is, when you think of your time on Who Wars, is there a song that comes to mind? And I think here we might start with Lex.
Star Wars or Doctor Who? Star Wars or Doctor Who? His name is Rob. His name is Rob. I've never been very good with words. This is no comment on the words themselves saying that they're not memorable. It's just a personal problem I have. So get out your blue milk and jelly babies, LLC, Star Wars, or Doctor Who, or something like that. It was a great song, I miss it. I hope this one plays that song at the beginning. Huh? Yeah? Maybe? That would be great to hear that song just one more time.
Alrighty, great singing, Lex. Kate, what do you think?
Well, of course, when I think of Who Wars, I'll always think of that iconic Star Wars or Doctor Who. But it's also so hard to say goodbye.
And finally, Andy, when you think of your time on Who Wars, what music or song comes to mind?
When I think of my time on Who Wars, is there a song that comes to mind? There is, and I annoyingly can't remember who it's by. I was lucky enough to get to review the Princess Leia comics and the Darth Vader comics, and I, as little teasers, I did some little psychology analysis of the characters Leia and Vader, and on the Princess Leia one I found an absolutely sensational version of Leia's theme tune played on electric guitar by a chap on YouTube, and he not only said we could use it, but he also allowed me to sort of chop it up a bit and re-edit it so it worked, so that one springs to mind. And I think somewhere out there there's actually a whole playlist of songs featured in the Darth Vader comic reviews, which had a life of their own, let's just say, a great list of rock songs.
Thank you. special thanks to Mark Roskilly for letting us use his wonderful version of the Princess Leia theme tune.
You know, it's appropriate that that last question of mine was about music, because this little segment here is all about the music of Who Wars, and the little stings and show openings and all sorts of things we've had over time on the show, because if there's one thing that people have often commented on, it's that we've had, you know, an interesting theme tune, or we've had interesting sounds during the episodes and all that kind of thing. And that's been quite deliberate over time. Make no mistake about that. I've actually paid musicians to put together theme tunes for us, that original Star Wars or Doctor Who theme, and then later the more rock and roll one with the big guitar solo. What you might not know is there are pieces of music that we never actually used. For example, between that original theme and the rock and roll theme, which was less popular, if I'm being fair, there was an alternate sort of version of the original theme. And the reason that came around was the lyrics to our theme song, you know, mention his name is Rob, he knows his Wookiees from his Daleks, blah, blah, blah. And that's because for the first couple of episodes of Who Wars, it was just me, and I thought it might have been just me for a period of time. But we soon built a team. Kate and Lex came on board, I think, in episode number 3. And so suddenly our theme music was out of date, and I thought, it's a little bit conceited having this song, you know, talking about me, when it's actually a team of 3 of us making these episodes. And I thought, I'll get a new theme made. And so I went back to the guy who made the original theme for not much money, and he wanted a hell of a lot more money. He'd realized his skills were in demand, and he, you know, quite rightly, people are, you know, entitled to be recompensed for their work. He's not a mate. He wasn't doing it for mates' rates or anything like that. And he wanted far too much money for what I could give for a podcast that makes zero money. You know, it's one thing to throw out a bit of money to people to make stuff, but to throw out near commercial money was just, no, I couldn't do that. So I found another guy and I said to him, look, here's what our theme is like. I'd like it to be quite similar. And I said, but instead of saying his name is Rob, he knows his Wookiees from his Daleks, can we say something like, it's the show that knows its Wookiees from its Daleks? And he said, yeah, I'll go away and I'll make something. And he made something, and it's competent. Some people might even quite like it, but when I played it to the team, and when I played it over and over to myself, I thought it's nowhere near as good to me as the original. It just feels a bit off somehow. I couldn't quite put my finger on it, and we never actually used it. So, for the first time, and the last time ever, here is the missing link, here is the Who Wars theme that came after the original, but before the rock and roll version.
The Star Wars or Doctor Who, Star Wars or Doctor Who, Star Wars or Doctor Who. It's the show.
It's the show.
It knows its Wookiees from its Daleks. Listen now.
Listen now.
Hear the Force challenge the TARDIS.
So get your blue milk and jelly babies, and we'll see what drives you crazy. Star Wars. Doctor Who.
So what did you think about that? Like it? Hate it? Sort of indifferent? Yeah, that's why we didn't use it in the end. Now, other bits of music we've had here on Who Wars include little stings for features and so on, and one that never saw the light of day for the simple reason that we never made the features in question was Doc Hume from the Diddly Dum podcast and myself were going to sit down and talk about a certain topic or topics. And I'm being vague about that because we still might do it for the Doctor Who show, so I don't want to spoil that. And for that, I thought, oh, let's have a special sort of intro for that. So I sat down initially with a musical type guy and I said, here's what is happening and here's what I want to sort of say in a little musical sting. And he gave me a demo of what he wanted to do, so let's play the demo.
Sit on the couch with good old Doc, not like that, he just want to talk, work it through with Doctor Who on Who Us. Come and join the queue.
All right, and I thought, hey, that sounds like fun and good, so yeah, go ahead, turn that into a more of a produced sort of piece for us. And he came back with this.
Sit on the couch with good old Doc. Not like that, he just wanna talk. Work it through about Doctor Who on Who Wars. Come and join the queue.
Now, as I say, we never got around to making the segments in question, so we couldn't use it. Now we can't use it because obviously it refers to Who Wars, and if we do those segments, they'll be on the Doctor Who show, so those stings will make no sense whatsoever. Something else I got made for the same batch of features was when I was talking to this other guy about my Clone Wars sting that I got made and used in several episodes when I was reviewing Clone Wars. I said, oh, could you do sort of this Doc Who thing for me as well? And you'll recognise the guy's voice because it's very similar in production to the Clone Wars sting that we did use on the show. And he produced this.
The lights are down. The couch is ready. It's time for some in-depth analysis with Doc Who.
So there you go. We had three different pieces that we could have used for the Doc Who segment, and we never did it. Anyway, we may do it in the future. Now, before I disappear from this little segment talking about music, I think I might preview something for you all. Now, this has had a small run in the Doctor Who review show, the show that Andy was putting together while Series 9 was on television, and it's the theme music to the Doctor Who show that's coming up later this month. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with the work of a certain French artist, I won't name him. Can you guess who it is? He produced something called Oxygen. His name might start with a Jean-Michel. Can you guess who it might be? Yes, that's right. We're using Jean-Michel Jarre's Oxygen theme as a basis for our version of the Doctor Who theme. Okay, hope you enjoyed that sneak peek at the new theme music for our new podcast. Now, before we get on to the Doctor Who Christmas special and talking to Kate and Lex about that, I do want to ask another question of the team. This question is, what will you miss most about contributing to Who Wars? And for something different, let's start with Andy.
Well, what I'll miss about contributing most to Who Wars is that there are briefs, but they're very open and vague briefs. You know, it'll be something as simple as, hey Andy, review this comic, thanks. And you can do it anywhere you want, and you can mess about, you can bring your mates in, you can bring other people in, other presenters, you could chat to people, you can create little montages, sound effects. It's great. I think it's just that freedom of contributing. And you know, nothing's out. If I want to do a psychological analysis of Princess Leia, then I can do that, and no one says whether it's wrong or right. Everyone's happy just to have these pieces, and that's been great.
All right, thanks Andy. And now Kate.
I'll definitely miss asking that famous question, Star Wars or Doctor Who. When I'm doing interviews now for other podcasts, I almost feel lost when I don't have that question to fall back on. So I will definitely miss that. And of course, I love Star Wars, and just losing that aspect of not submitting things for Star Wars was a bit of a blow at first. But thankfully, there's many other Star Wars podcasts out there. But yeah, I'll definitely miss the mashup of Star Wars and Doctor Who. It was something really unique and something really special.
Finally, Lex, what will you miss most about contributing to Who Wars?
Gosh, I don't even want to think about that. I'm going to miss Who Wars. I mean, I've already missed it, but knowing it's really going to be done, it's rough. You know, what will I miss most about contributing to Hogwarts? I'm not really the type that's going to want to miss things. I'm just going to have to rewatch the episodes and live in the past. What's the point of missing things? Alright, I take that back. I think what I'll miss most about Who Wars, contributing to Who Wars in particular, is seeing how Rob puts it all together. Each host that does, you know, puts it all together adds their unique bit to it. And I think Rob did a really great job of that, you know, introducing us all and adding in his own commentary to also. I've always appreciated that. I think Rob is a very important, I mean, the whole team is a very important part of Who Wars. Each one of us is kind of intertwined into one unified mark that is Who Wars. Yeah, I'll probably miss most the hearing that after product, how it all turned out, just seeing that, the anticipation of how's this going to work out this time? How is it all going to fit together? I'll miss that.
All right, great answers, guys, although they're making me a little sad and weepy as this episode moves along. Why don't we kick into talking about the Doctor Who Christmas special? It feels like forever since we've done this.
It has been. Yep.
Can I help you?
Yes, are you the surgeon?
Close enough, why?
There's a medical emergency.
Do I know you?
You most certainly do not.
My husband is dying.
That's your husband?
Is there a problem?
Destroy them!
I don't like it.
Here we go.
All right, well, we've had the Christmas special for 2015, Doctor Who. Let's start with some overall impressions. And I know we haven't compared notes. I haven't even really seen any social media from you guys on it. So in a few words, what did you think, Kate?
I really liked it. It was actually one of my favorite episodes, like, ever.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What made it so?
I don't know. I thought it was really funny. Like, I don't usually laugh that much during an episode. So I thought it was really funny. I've always liked River Song. It was good to see her again. And yeah, I just liked how they ended it. And that was good.
Nice. Nice. And Lex, how about you? Initial thoughts?
Well, I was laughing quite a bit too, especially, you know, with the whole situation of the Doctor trying to, you know, make all these huge hints that he's the Doctor and Rose, River just not picking up on it at all. That's funny. I almost called her Rose. Yeah, that was funny. I was laughing quite a bit, too. Overall, sad and very romantic. It was different. That's an unusual combination, especially the romance part coming from the Doctor. Mm. Like, the end bit, it was almost like a black and white kind of old film, and, like, the Doctor could have been Cary Grant for all I knew at first glance, you know? It was... like, where is this coming from? But I loved it. It was amazing.
He definitely has that older leading man vibe. But oh, yeah. I guess we'll get to that a bit later on. Let's take a step back for a moment and talk River Song in general, you know, before this episode. Did you guys like her from the start and then maybe get tired of her like some people did because she kept coming back, or were you a bit unsure of her at first but then you warmed to her as she kept reappearing, or maybe you liked her all along? I know fandom has such different opinions of River. How about you, Lex?
I find it really hard to see that point of view of why people would get so sick of her, because I love her. And the whole premise of her character, how she's so chronologically messed up, you know, backwards. I think it's brilliantly written. And I think she's an awesome actress, so I don't see what the problem is there. Although, like, I guess in terms of being a match with Matt Smith, which is what we've seen her predominantly with, maybe it wasn't, like, precisely the perfect match. And on that note, I really love the interaction of River with Capaldi. I think they're a better match. Too bad we're probably not going to get them anymore. But, I mean, I love River, her character. I've never had a problem with her, ever.
So she stood out for you right from the library episodes, for example?
Yeah, right from the library episodes. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, and Kate, how about you?
Yeah, I've always liked her. I thought she's a really fun and intriguing character. I like the whole kind of like Indiana Jones as a woman aspect of her, that she's an archaeologist and she's just like going around and going on adventures. But yeah, I've never had a problem with her and I'm always happy to see her.
Okay, yes. So even when they brought in, say, I'm playing devil's advocate here, of course, even when they brought in that she's the daughter of the Ponds, that didn't make you roll your eyes and go, oh my god, what's going on?
No, I totally, I saw that one coming, kind of, but I didn't have a problem with it.
Okay, well, what did you both think of her in this Christmas special? Because to me, here, she's prepared to murder, and she seems quite mercenary with her relationships, like many times she says, I married the diamond. And she steals the TARDIS and hints that maybe she's done it before. She says, oh, yeah, the Doctor, he's useful sometimes. Did that seem like a bit of a leap from where we've seen her in the past? Or have we only maybe just seen one side of her in the past, perhaps? How about you, Kate, first?
Well, considering her origins, that she was basically brought up to kill the Doctor, right? So I didn't think it was too much of a stretch.
Good point. And Lex?
Yeah, that's true. I always forget that she is basically constructed as a murderer. Or that's what her roots are. So, I mean, who knows how long it had been since she'd actually seen the Doctor. I mean, she was 200 years old. That was surprising, by the way. I didn't realize that she would be so old. So maybe it had been like 50 years since she'd seen the Doctor. That's, you know, bound to create some kind of hardening morally. I mean, that's why the Doctor has companions. River can't just be left alone for 50 years and not come out of it somewhat hardened, like a diamond, you might say, marrying another diamond, you know?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think it gave some depth. Initially, it was a little jarring. I was like, oh, River's not normally like this. She's normally just like a bit fun and has some quips, but here she's quite prepared to kill all these people. Admittedly, they were very, very bad people, and I think they went overboard trying to reinforce that even the waiters on this ship were horrible people as well, to sort of, you know, to make it clear that she wasn't killing good people, perhaps. But it felt a little jarring at first, but then I thought, but hey, yes, she's 200-ish now, and Big Finish are going to do River Song adventures, so maybe there's this whole period of 100-odd years or more where, you know, she does all sorts of stuff, perhaps. And just because we haven't seen it on screen doesn't mean that the character's not capable of it, I guess.
Yeah. I didn't know that she was doing a Big Finish project. That's awesome.
Yeah, that came out, oh gosh, not that long ago. She's signed up and she'll be doing some Big Finish. That to me was also a hint that the Christmas special might be the last time we saw her. Not just the fact that it seemed her story was coming to an end anyway, but once I think you start doing Big Finish, you're probably not going to be on TV anymore.
Yeah.
All right, shall we run through some aspects of this episode?
Sure.
First, I liked this, the title sequence. It had a real festive sort of makeover. There was little flurries of snow and there were Christmas baubles in the time vortex. It felt really Christmassy, and I wondered why they'd never done something that Christmassy to the credits in the past. Did you guys like it, Lex?
Yeah, yes, that was an excellent Christmassy aspect. I actually didn't noticed that, but I think it's awesome. That was great. Overall, maybe not the most Christmassy episode ever, but I also liked that, and maybe we can talk about that later.
Definitely. And Kate, did you pick up on the Christmassy credits?
No, I didn't.
Oh no.
But yeah, I agree with what Lex was saying. Like, I felt like it wasn't that Christmassy, but I mean, it was enough Christmas for a Christmas special, I thought. But I think sometimes they go overboard with the Christmassy aspects.
Oh yeah, so I thought, like, it was last year's was overboard Christmas.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, last Christmas we had Santa, whether he was there or not, or he was just a hallucination. I can't even remember that plot anymore.
I know.
We had the Widow, the Witch in the Wardrobe, where it was Christmas Day and they landed that World War II bomber on their front yard so Father could come home because it was Christmas.
That was like You're not talking about the same episode. I was like,
No. Then we had A Christmas Carol, which was possibly the most Christmassy episode ever. But then there have been others, like the Titanic one, where it was just Christmas time and he crashed and so on. Right. They crashed the Titanic. So, yeah, it can vary. But this was a very Christmassy one.
An hour ago, right before this, I was watching the David Tennant's first episode ever, that Christmas special.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That was nice. It's not too Christmassy. There's, you know, like a Christmas tree, about a very hostile Christmas tree, I should say. But like, it wasn't overboard Christmas. It was a nice balance, an introduction of a new character, so it was relevant to the rest of the series. It wasn't just, you know, incredibly random like some of them sometimes feel. Well, that's debatable, I guess, but I like that episode. There are a lot of good ones.
Hmm. What about you, Kate? Do you like the Christmassy ones or the ones where it's just vaguely Christmas?
Less Christmassy, the better, I'd say.
That's interesting.
So when Matt Smith went to live in the town of Christmas for 1,000 years or whatever it was in his final story, you were like, oh no, turn it off.
I can't, like, they all kind of mesh together. It's hard to remember them. But yeah, basically.
There's so much Doctor Who out there, it's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they only come once a year too, so it's easy to forget. I mean, I can't really remember what happened last Christmas, except there were crabs that made you lose your memory, and maybe Santa was there, and maybe he wasn't. And that's all I remember.
Yeah, same here.
That's not really your fault. I think the plot itself was open to a lot of questioning. Mm. It really wasn't that clear of what was real, I don't think. That's kind of the point. It
maybe
was confusing.
Maybe we're dreaming now.
Exactly.
Ooh. <Yeah. laughs> That's weird. All right, so I jotted down a question here, so I might as well ask it, but we've already been talking about it, I guess, to some degree. Sometimes the Christmas specials are of varying quality and tone. Sometimes they go somber and emotional, and sometimes they go a bit madcap and silly. Whereas this one, I think, you know, just putting the Christmas theme aside for the moment, this kind of did both. It was very sort of silly and fun at the beginning, but then got very somber and emotional towards the end. Lex, you were talking earlier about how this could have been a like an old black and white movie. Do you want to talk a bit more about that?
Right. It's unusual to see the Doctor so pained emotionally in that kind of, like you said, the somber. It's not like, usually the Doctor is like shouting, emotional and full of anger, you know, but this was a different side, a different kind of emotion. I don't know. What was the original question? Am I missing an aspect of that question?
Yeah. Earlier you were talking about it being like an old black and white movie. He's a leading man, sort of like Cary Grant, I think you might have said.
Yeah, so that in itself is different than a usual feeling for Christmas. Like you said, it definitely wasn't madcap and silly. It was a far different range of emotions that was coming out of this episode.
Well, at the end, at least. At the start, where the heads were coming off and being put in bags. And I actually have something to say about that, but I'll say it in a moment. But first I'll say to you, Kate, what did you think, how it was kind of a bit silly at the start, but then got very somber and emotional? Were you expecting that, perhaps?
I don't know. I never know what to expect with Doctor Who. But, yeah, definitely. Like, I wasn't expecting it to be so funny at the start, for sure. Like, I was literally LOLing.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's one line that was funny, but also had a connection to the Doctor's first episode. A lot of people have been saying this is a goodbye or like a last huzzah from Moffat. And Moffat's, the Capaldi's first episode, he gets hit by Madame Vastra, and there's a line about a piano. Did you notice that line at the very beginning about... explaining to what's his name, you know, sometimes like I don't know what's going on, and then everybody turns into lizards and a piano falls on you, that line.
And now that you mention it, I do.
Yeah,
I was so, not only is it very funny, but I loved that callback to his first episode ever. It was a great line. Definitely. Okay, maybe that was off topic, but I wanted to, like, you know, fan over it with you guys. Fan obsessed.
That's awesome.
I'd love to fan over it, but I missed it completely. I remember the line, but I didn't put two and two together.
Yeah, I guess I rewatched the Deep Breath episode recently, so it was kind of just very obvious to me. Luck. It was luck.
All right. Well, we've been talking a bit about the Doctor already, so let's talk about him specifically. How did he come across in this episode to you guys? Maybe we'll start with you first, Kate. And I guess when we last saw him, he'd lost his memory of Clara to some degree, and he's flown off into space, and now we see him here. It was almost like a new start for him, to me at least. What did you think?
Wait, so he lost his memory?
Well, yeah, because he couldn't... Well, he'd been sitting with Clara in the cafe, and he didn't know who she was, so... But he remembered that there had been someone called Clara in the past.
I totally missed that.
Oh, really?
Kate, yeah. Go on. Again.
I guess I didn't pay attention enough during the last couple episodes.
Yep. We've got to send you back to Doctor Who school, I think. You've had too much Star Wars.
I know. Yeah. Star Wars on the brain.
Well, just in general then, how did the Doctor come across to you in this episode?
Yeah, like you were saying, a new start. And I was thinking, I guess even if he has forgotten her to some degree, like, he would still be mourning in some sense. And I kind of thought that maybe he was a little bit.
Although I guess we don't know how long it's been since we last saw him, so it could be a year, it could be 10 years. We don't know. What about you, Lex? What did you think of Capaldi here?
Well, overall, the whole episode, I guess he was rather sneaky. And, you know, that comes across as another... You could say that it's not just River being somewhat different than the character that she usually is. The Doctor's being very sneaky and not being very upfront with somebody he's really close with. You know, it's... That was deceptive and not very loyal to somebody who deserves maybe a bit more truth up front. Whatever. It was an awesome interaction that I would never trade in for anything else. But coming across... In terms of that, I guess that's worth pointing out, in my view, that the Doctor was deceptive and sneaky.
Well, he, playing devil's advocate, he did say he is the Doctor, but do you think he could have tried harder?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, he definitely, definitely tried, but still, that when you, like, overall, that was sneaky and deceptive.
Well, fair enough. Now, there's been a lot of feedback out there in fandom, and people have been writing into the Radio Times with some comments, and I thought I'd grab a few of those comments and read them out because it'll give maybe some differing opinions to what we've had in general, and also give us a chance to maybe comment on the comments, if that makes sense. So the first one is, in the last 5 years, I have watched every episode available. I love this episode and am glad to finally know how she got that sonic, obviously referring to River Song, and am going to bed wondering if that was the last time we'll see her. Seems she had a few more pages in her diary. Hats off to Moffat. Wonderful episode. What do we think of that comment, Lex?
I'm definitely agreeing with this person. Hats off to Moffat. And I love it when the writers decide to finally add in, fill in those plot holes, tie up loose ends, the storyline strings that haven't been quite tied together. Knowing how she got that sonic was... very satisfying. And also, not just the sonic, her whole, her storyline right before she meets the 10th Doctor. Yeah, so it's very satisfying. It was great.
If I had one quibble with it, the line in the library episode was, you know, the last time we met, you gave me your sonic. And I'm thinking, It's not his sonic, though. It's never been his sonic. It's a completely different design, so...
Well, there.
Close, yeah. But no cigar, Moffat. Kate, what about you? Did you feel it tied up some loose ends, or do you feel this is the last time we'll see River?
Yeah, I think it is. I liked the whole thing with the sonic, and I liked her sonic trowel. I thought that was funny.
Oh, of course, because she's the archaeologist. Yeah, that was fun.
That was hilarious.
Lex, any thoughts on the sonic trowel?
Oh, sorry. I was still thinking about what you said about the sonic screwdriver. It was a complete misunderstanding, and that gift that the Doctor gave her, she somehow understood that sonic was his sonic that he was giving her. Do you think that's possible? You know, I'm just fishing for an explanation. That is upsetting that sonic screwdriver line in the library episode clearly said that it was his. Okay. What did you just ask me about the trowel?
What did you think of the sonic trowel for the archaeologist River Song?
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. Yes, she is an archaeologist. Yes, I nod to that. Yes,
yeah, very useful too.
Yeah.
Indeed. I'd seen that, I think, in a publicity photo seemed to have spoiled a lot for me this past series, actually. And I think I saw the trowel in a publicity shot, and I thought it was funny then, but actually seeing it on screen was very cool. All right, let's move on to another comment to the Radio Times. This one says, Peter Capaldi is super, but wasted with scripts that are too drawn out. The last 20 minutes were good. I love the Matt Smith season for pace and humour. Stephen Moffat is an excellent writer, but sometimes bogged down with monologues. I watched this with two fans and parents. All of us gave up at some point. River's monologue had me off at to the kettle, and I like Alex Kingston. Greg Davies' comic genius was underutilised, and that's his strength. Greg Davies, of course, is playing King Hydroflex. Kate, you've been preoccupied with Star Wars lately. Were you preoccupied during this special, like this lady going off to her kettle?
No, I really liked it. Like I said, like it's one of my favorite episodes, and I was like actually watching and paying attention the whole episode.
Very good. How about you, Lex?
It's funny. I like that line about off to the kettle. That's usually me during the opening credits. Maybe that's why I missed the Christmas lights in it.
Well, it's a very British thing, at least, to go off and make a cup of tea.
It is, definitely.
How about this comment? I'll throw this open to both of you so you can fight over it. Peter Capaldi is super, but wasted with scripts that are too drawn out.
Yeah, the monologue bit is true. There have been maybe an abundance of monologues, excessive amount of monologuing. I can think of the Zygon episode. It was a very important monologue, but a perfect example of what that person's saying, and I agree with it, that it was just a little bit too much. It was like, yeah, okay, I'll go do something else now. Any moment now, he'll be done. A little bit.
I didn't feel that with this particular episode so much. I can see your point, like, with past episodes, but yeah. I didn't get that with this one.
Yeah, this one, not so much. I don't know. Yeah, I can't think of...
Are they talking specifically about this episode?
I think they are, on the whole, but I think when they talk about he's wasted with scripts that are too drawn out, they're probably referring to multiple stories over the past season.
Okay.
All right, let's move on to the next one. Here's a short one. They say, the beginning was all fluff, but once they landed on that spaceship and it was all about the Doctor and River, I loved it. I was blubbing at the end. Did either of you two cry?
No.
I did. Oh, well, I teared up. I'm always tearing up at Doctor Who. That's nothing new.
Okay, to be fair, though, I didn't even cry the first time I saw The Force Awakens. So take that for what it is.
Really? Now, that is interesting. Because even I had a little moment.
Oh, wow.
I'm just a robot, I guess.
All right, then. So, we sort of blubbed and we sort of didn't blub. Is that the consensus from the team?
Yes.
All right. No. Next letter. This person says they're unsure. They say, like Disney and Love Actually watering down Doctor Who. I've never seen Love Actually, just incidentally. I know everyone talks about it at Christmas time, but I've never seen it. Back to the letter. Expected more from Hydroflax and Matt Lucas's characters. Tied a few loose ends, though. The ending was sugar-coated. I liked it in bits. What do we think of this comment, Lex?
It's okay if you haven't seen Love Actually. It's a really good movie, but not as necessary as some people make it out to be. And I hope nobody hurts me somehow after saying that. But okay, what did you say? What was the last bit of that?
Well, they said it was a bit watered down. It was a bit Disney, a bit Love Actually. They thought the Hydroflax, King Hydroflax, and Matt Lucas's characters weren't really used that well. And the ending was sugar-coated.
Right. Yeah. Sugar-coated. Nah. Well, I like sugar. But the giant robot thing, I think that was probably for the kids. And that actor wasn't that interesting or funny. You know, he wasn't giving anything particularly noteworthy. It was very stereotypical. I'm an angry robot and mindless sort of, you know, running around. I don't know.
Literally.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting because if we go back a couple of letters here, someone did say Greg Davies' comic genius was underutilized and that's his strength. So I think you're probably agreeing with that letter writer.
Yeah, I actually did have that in mind too. Yeah, I definitely agree.
Yeah, because he is quite a funny guy. I've not seen him in a lot of things, but I do recall him from The Inbetweeners, that TV series where he played the school principal or headmaster. Just looking at this question as well, Matt Lucas, have either of you two seen Little Britain?
No.
Ah, okay.
Is he the bald guy?
Yes, Matt Lucas, I was going to say he's the little chubby bald guy who knocked on the TARDIS at the start. He is best known for a TV series called Little Britain that he was in with David Walliams. And David Walliams is someone who's already been in Doctor Who. He was in the one where they were locked in the hotel and it turned out there was a Minotaur in there with them. And I can't think of the name of the episode for the life of me. The God Complex.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
So those two were a comedy duo. They don't really work together much anymore, but now they've both been in Doctor Who, which is interesting. So I was going to say, if you know Little Britain and you know Matt Lucas, you'd know he can be very funny, but all he sort of did was sort of knock on the TARDIS and ask for the surgeon, and next thing he didn't have a head.
He's kind of like the village idiot.
Yeah.
Very much so. So I think he was underused myself.
I still liked him, though.
Yeah, he was funny.
Yeah, he was funny.
Speaking of losing heads, though, is it just me, or is the whole reason he took his head off quite silly? Like, they're saying, oh, we've got to get his head off, the king's head off, and he takes it off for them and says, ah, see, like that. And that sort of makes him vulnerable right from the get-go, whereas I thought they maybe could have done a more clever thing to get his head off, perhaps.
Nope, they couldn't.
And they didn't.
No, they sure didn't. I was thinking that too while watching it. I was like, what is this guy doing? That was a really bad move. But hey, I guess let the episode continue. Just don't concentrate on it. Everything's fine.
Yeah, it did help the episode move along quickly. But that was probably one of the big clangers that stood out to me. Like, oh, that was just way too easy. You need the bad guy's head and he takes his own head off for you. Great.
Oh, speaking of heads... Wasn't it gross when the guy digged in his brain?
Oh, yeah.
It was like really gross.
Yeah, people might be having Christmas dinner at the time, perhaps.
Right.
Great.
It was awesome, though. That was pretty. It was gross, but cool. I liked them.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to the next letter. This is the final letter I've got, and then we'll get into some commentary about Stephen Moffat and Peter Capaldi. This last letter says, it started off as a real bore and a cringe, but became more interesting halfway through, particularly when River recognized the Doctor and that really poignant ending. It became like a real Moffat swan song then. What do you reckon, Kate?
I definitely disagree with that one because, like, I loved the beginning. Like, I don't know, I'm like... My brain is, like, opposite of some of these ones.
So when they said, I need the surgeon, and he goes, close enough, and runs off, that was all fun for you?
Yeah, I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
I thought it was.
Yeah, and go on, I actually... Lex. Oh, sorry.
Oh, both of you?
No. But I thought
we haven't done
this
for so long.
That's what editing is for. But I thought that when... River wasn't recognizing the Doctor. That was some of the funniest parts. So I definitely disagree with this reviewer.
But they use the word poignant and, I don't know what that is supposed to signify, just a more deeper level. And it was more, I don't know, everybody's different. If you think it's more interesting when things suddenly get really, like, up close and personal, everybody's putting their feelings out there, sure. That's what I think started to happen after that point. So if you're into that, then great. I love it all, but it's certainly, that acting, that moment when she looks at him and, you know, kind of just like does that shake of the head and like, oh my God, I get it now, but like keeps it cool at the same time. That was brilliant. It was, I love that act. Alex Kingston, right? Mm. I love her. That was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they went together really well as a couple because of him being older. You know, it looked a bit more believable. I know they're already, she's 200 and he's whatever he is these days. But I think the original plan for the 11th Doctor to have been older might have seen River with an older Doctor. And then Matt Smith sort of buggered that up by being so good at his audition that they cast him anyway. But I think the 11th was going to be older. So we might have had River with an older guy originally, and this maybe gave us a little taste of what that might have been like during an alternate 11th Doctor sort of era.
Fascinating.
Wow. Well, thank you.
Wow. Yeah, I missed this. I learned so much when I talk with you guys.
Well, the Doctor Who show does continue in the new year, monthly.
Yeah. Good reason to keep on listening.
Exactly right. And with that plug out of the way, This letter mentions swan songs, and I guess speaking of swan songs, not that we needed it, but I think this was further proof that Stephen Moffat thought 2015 was going to be his last year on the show. You know, first he tied up a bunch of loose ends, and he brought back Gallifrey in the series proper. And here in the Christmas special, he sealed off River's story, and he gave us that new suit and haircut moment, which, you know, had been teased many years ago now in the library episodes. But it seems that he is staying on for another series, and that was decided only a couple of months ago. So are you happy that Moffat's, you know, doing what seems to be one more series on top of this, or was this a really good one to have gone out on season 9 and this Christmas special? How about you first, Kate?
I don't know. I don't have a problem with Moffat. And he's had some really good episodes, so I guess I'm happy to have him around longer.
Hmm. One more season longer.
Yes.
Moffat came on the same time as Matt Smith, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's kind of, what's he going to do now? If he stays on, like, he's lost all of his companions that he's had over the years. Even River now, it seems like. So, like, what is he going to do? His trademark is sort of to focus on the companions and then not let them go forever, completely obsessed over them. So this guy isn't going to stay that much longer. What does he expect to do? It's going to be completely different. It's going to be a wild card. I don't know.
It's interesting. It makes me wonder whether he'll just have a series of just one-off stories that are just fun and not really part of any arc, because I don't think he'll want to set up an arc and then have someone step in and have to resolve his arc.
Right,
so
yeah.
Unless he does a really small arc within one series, I think maybe we could be in for some, you know, Monster of the Week episodes, and it just is like maybe a fun romp next. Well, I say next year, but I think it's going to be really 2017 before we see the episodes.
And I don't know how I feel about that. I do like the long stretching themes. Maybe not being so obsessed on certain characters like Clara, but I don't know. I'll see. I'm sure I'll like it because generally I think Moffat's a great writer. I think he's great. So who knows?
Kate, any more thoughts?
Yeah, I kind of like what you were saying there. I like Monster of the Week episodes. And sometimes I get tired of story arcs. Like, I just get sick of watching them. So I think I would probably like that. So there you go.
It looks refreshing.
Well, yeah, because certainly since he came in with Matt Smith, he has tied in a lot of arcs, and he's tied in, you know, as you say, a few long-running companions and so on. So this would be his first series where, because I don't think he will leave things for another writer to pick up on, I think he will have to do something pretty clever and tie it all up within one series. So I think series 10 could be really fun.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I always think such a thing before a season starts.
And then it all goes downhill from there.
Oh, that's so depressing.
No, just kidding. I'm kidding. I like, for the record, I like series 9 much better than series 8, so I thought this was a great past series.
Me too. Yes.
All right, tying into the whole concept of, you know, Moffat coming to an end after the next series, There's been a comment from Peter Capaldi, which appropriately enough he made when doing media for this episode, for the Christmas episode. And he said, "This could be my final year. It's terrifying. I love Doctor Who, but it can be quite an insular world, and I do want to do other things. There will come a time when this is over, but I knew that when I started. I was thinking about my regeneration scene from the outset. That's my terrible melancholic nature. When you accept the job, you'll know there'll come a day, inevitably, where you'll be saying goodbye." Now, this isn't the first time Peter Capaldi has talked like this, although last time he did, it was a bit more broadly. Here he's saying this could be my final year. He's actually putting a time frame on it. So what do you think about him going? I'll start with Lex.
Oh, well, that's a rather sad thought. He's always thinking about his regeneration when he's going to die. Well, not really good. I mean,
well, he says that's his terrible melancholic nature.
Yeah, that's that is depressing a little bit. But yeah, I mean, he's not wrong. What am I going to think? Is that like, or how am I going to feel when he leaves?
Yeah, what do you think of him going? How will you feel? What do you reckon?
Well, I'm going to miss him. I am looking forward to the next Doctor, though, which I guess is a sign, I don't know, that I kind of miss some aspects of the Doctor that Capaldi perhaps doesn't have as much of. But, like, I'm not taking back what I just said. I really, really am going to miss him. He's been a great Doctor so far and still is. He's excellent. I don't know, he's filled in a gap that I think really needed to be filled in for New Who, a classic, more serious type of Doctor. It was important that it was done, and he's fulfilled it wonderfully. But I do kind of miss, I don't know, something more wild and maybe unusual, something uncanny. That Capaldi doesn't quite have. I don't know, maybe you guys know what I'm talking about, but I'm looking forward to a new Doctor as much as I love Capaldi.
Well, before I throw to Kate, I would say to that, Capaldi does act as people, so I'm not saying anything profound here or new, he does act with a certain stillness. He does a lot of just being still, and, you know, he does these monologues, and he's not Matt Smith flapping his hands around. He's not David Tennant running full pelt with his coat flapping behind him. He's not that Doctor. So I can see what you mean by wanting maybe a more dynamic kind of Doctor, because Capaldi is a very still sort of actor in general. So I would throw that in. But what about you, Kate? How have you felt about Capaldi, and how do you feel about him leaving?
I've actually really liked Capaldi. Next to Tennant, I think he's probably my favorite. But at the same time...
I was going to say, what made you like him? Because he came in as a much older Doctor, and I know you hadn't seen a lot of classic Who, right. So this would have been a very new thing for you. Like, oh, there's this old guy now, he's got grey hair, what's going on? You know, how did that work out for you in the end?
I like how he's, like, really grumpy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know, I feel like I can relate to that sometimes. But, yeah, like, at the same time, as much as I've liked him, I do realize that's the nature of Doctor Who is... regeneration, and all good things must come to an end, so I will be okay with a new Doctor.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be it looks like he'll be a 3-series Doctor, but a 4-year Doctor, because I think we're going to spend most of next year without any Who, because this time last year they were gearing up to start filming. I think they were filming by January or February in order to give us the schedule we've just seen. Whereas I don't think they'll be filming until probably the middle of next year, which means maybe the first thing we'll see is the Christmas special, and his final series will be in 2017. So he'll be the Doctor for maybe 4 years, but only in 3 series, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Wow.
Timey-wimey.
Indeed. All right. Well, okay, let's look back on this Christmas episode. At the start, we sort of gave some overall opinions. Why don't we give it a score now? I don't know if you've even thought about a score out of 10, but if I had to go first, I would say it's probably around a 7 out of 10 for me. How about you, Kate?
Actually, like, I didn't even think of scoring it with my sonic screwdriver system. I'll go 9 sonic screwdrivers out of 10.
That high?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Lex, what about you?
My instinct is to go 9 Sonic Screwdrivers out of 10.
Yeah.
Also, yeah. although it's a hard one because it was so, as I said, not really Christmassy, but I guess that's not really a bad trait. And the whole robot thing was rather silly, but that end bit of the interaction between River and the Doctor and that goodbye was so important that I up it up to a 9, I think. So that's why.
Have either of you two seen, I can't even remember if I've thrown it out on social media, someone has taken the library episode where River has handcuffed David Tennant to the whatever he's handcuffed to, and she's about to die, and she's saying, the last time I saw you, you had a new suit, new haircut, and you took me to the whatever those towers are. And it has actually cut in footage from the Christmas special. So while she's talking about those things, you see it. And then when she says, look, there's so much more for you, you know, it's over for me, but there's so much more for you. We're going to see a lot of each other. There's footage of Matt Smith and her sort of cut in. It's really, really nice. Have either of you seen it?
Nope.
No.
I might have to send you some links. It's a really, really nice piece of video.
Sounds cool.
Sounds heartbreaking. I'm going to cry.
It does actually make it sadder. In fact, I almost wish in the episode itself they had done it because it sort of filled in, you know, people's memories,
and
I guess, of those scenes.
We could have had David Tennant in another episode.
Maybe we could have, yeah. Well, this has been fun on our last episode of Who Wars to do this.
Yep.
Very much so. Yeah. It's been great, guys. Great to hear you again. Hopefully we can do it again, too. Maybe.
Definitely. Oh, yeah. I think we'll have a Christmas special next year. If we don't have a series at all, this will be a Christmas special. So I think the three of us can maybe reconvene then and see what happens. But, of course, who knows what you guys will throw into the Doctor Who show over the year ahead.
Who knows?
Exactly. Thanks, guys.
Merry belated Christmas.
And to you too. Merry belated Christmas.
Bye. The bye wasn't really necessary. Sorry. I forgot.
Oh, that was great. That was really good.
Bye.
Bye.
Later. I'm still recording, by the way.
And there you go, Lex, Kate and myself talking like old times about the recent Doctor Who Christmas special, The Husbands of River Song. Before we move into my summary of Who Wars number 42, why don't we have another question with the team? And this is a big one. You know, the time has come. The moment has arrived for you guys. Star Wars or Doctor Who? Let's start with Kate.
So, for me, Star Wars or Doctor Who? 100% unequivocally Star Wars. But, I mean, if you listen to the podcast, you probably already knew that.
All right, thanks, Kate. Lex?
Really? We're still doing this? You're still making us ask? I'm still more... Ugh, I had to stop myself. You're going to make me sick. Can't choose between Star Wars and Doctor Who. We're both. The two are together.
And Andy, Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Star Wars or Doctor Who? I interviewed lots of people for Who Wars, and I asked that question a lot. And every single one of the people said Doctor Who. It might be a lie. I think somebody said Space Odyssey, I think. But it's mostly because I interviewed Doctor Who people, let's face it. But it's Doctor Who. There's just more of it. There's just so much juicy material. It's all so different. There's less Star Wars if you just take the films themselves as the canon you work with. And even the expanded universe and the animations and things, they've all got a look to them. A feel of architecture and colour and things like that. With Doctor Who, it's just different every time, and it's just such a diverse and interesting, exciting programme.
Also, it's been said many a time, but if you were growing up in England in the 1970s, you had three telly channels. Doctor Who was on, you watched it, it was great.
And there you go. As that lightsaber turns off for the final time, we're here at the end of the final Who Wars, episode number 42. A number I was happy to end on, actually, because it has, you know, those Douglas Adams kind of connotations. They probably do for many of you out there if you're sci-fi fans as well. And so this is, I guess, the point where I wrap it up. I still have another question for the team. I'll play that at the very end, though. I guess for me, I want to say that I've really enjoyed doing this podcast. I wouldn't have done it otherwise. And it's been amazing, some of the stuff we did over the 42 episodes plus specials that we created. I mean, you've got to remember when I started, I thought it might be a solo podcast like my previous one, The Comic Book Show, had been. It may stay that way. It may just be me talking monologues week after week into a microphone because it was weekly at the time. And never in my wildest dreams did I think I'd get together such a great team as I got in Andy and Kate and Lex and a bunch of contributors too who put in little pieces from time to time, sometimes as one-off, sometimes two or three pieces here and there. Too many really to mention, but if you go back through the episodes, you'll hear them, and their contributions were great as well. I never thought I would have a podcast that, you know, attracted, you know, so many people listening and so many people happy to contribute, you know, their time freely, literally and figuratively. And, you know, as time went on, I also never thought I'd have a situation where one of the team would be sitting on stage with the Sixth Doctor, Colin Baker, and interviewing him, and that's something Andy did. And I never really thought about conventions and stuff in the US. Obviously, I'm here in Australia, and then suddenly Kate was out at, you know, Star Wars Celebration or Phoenix Comic Con, and getting around and asking people vox pop questions and even getting interviews with some really great talent when you go back and listen to some of those interviews she did. And, of course, Lex, you know, the way you express things and your comic reviews in particular have been great, but we also did other cool stuff, like when Lex and I got together and went through the 11th Doctor's era and we picked out the stories we liked and none of them doubled up. And we got to talk about them. That was a fun thing to do. So many memories when I look back on the things we've done. And, you know, I'm sure the team will look back, if not already, then in time, on the things they did with Who Wars. And as I say, some of it's going to continue into the future. The Doctor Who side of things will continue. Kate, Andy and Lex are all on board for the new podcast in different ways. So, you know, as I said earlier, this isn't a sad moment in the sense that I won't see these people again or talk to them again or anything like that. But it's sad that the show is ending, and, you know, what thoughts do I have left in my head as the countdown ticks down? Well, I guess one thing I could say is that it proved a hybrid podcast can work. It seemed so bizarre and strange to me, even when I was starting the podcast, that I was actually mashing up Star Wars and Doctor Who. They don't really have a lot in common outside of both being science fantasy, to my mind at least. And in the year and a bit since we started, I've actually seen other hybrid podcasts appear. Now, maybe that's new car syndrome to some degree. I mean, you know, when you get a new car, suddenly you notice that model of car everywhere, often the same colour and model of car everywhere. So maybe it's that. Maybe it wasn't until I did a hybrid podcast that I noticed some. But at the same time, I do remember a lot of people commenting on how weird and different the idea was. So I think it was still fairly unique at the time. And since then, I have seen other mashup podcasts. There's a Star Wars and Star Trek one out there. And, yeah, gosh, look, I don't want to go too deep into a monologue here, otherwise I'll probably just upset myself and maybe even upset some of you listening. So I just want to say again, like I said at the start, this episode was as much for you guys out there who listen as it was for us who put it together. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope if it was the first time you've listened to Who Wars, maybe because you've come through the Doctor Who side of things and now you've heard what we used to do back in the olden days, you'll go back and listen to some of our old episodes. There's a ton of just Doctor Who stuff, if that's all you're into. But a ton of interesting Star Wars stuff as well, especially in some of the earlier episodes where I used to do sort of news snippets about The Force Awakens. And now that the film is out, you can sort of go back and see what was on the money and what wasn't. And surprisingly, a lot of it was. That's kind of fun to look back on. So, that's all from me. You'll be hearing from me later in the month with the Doctor Who show. So, again, this isn't farewell forever. This isn't really a sad moment. But I do think it's time for me to get off the stage and leave it to our three key contributors to close things out as I ask them, do you have any parting thoughts for Who Wars listeners? Good night, everybody. Take care.
So, Who Wars, so long. And thanks for all the fish. Big thanks to Rob, too, for seeing something in me that I never even saw myself, and for setting me on this adventure of podcasting that has led me to some of the coolest and most interesting people I've ever met. Who Wars was definitely the start of an incredible journey, but it was just that, the start. And I know there's going to be tons and tons more awesome things down the road. So thanks again to everyone. And probably for the last time I'll ever say it, allons-y, and may the force be with you.
Any parting thoughts to the Who Wars listeners? I'm going to echo what me and Rob talk about quite a lot. And that is grassroots Star Wars. This is the non-glitzy packed in a toy box and sold at the Disney store Star Wars. This is the talking about the interesting little facts that could easily get lost. I sent Rob a link to an item that was on British Telly the other week about how a British car company called Reliant, who made the famous three-wheeler cars in the UK, actually developed the land speeder for Star Wars. It's little stories and facts like that. So, you know, that's a parting thought. And I also realised that none of these questions really let me say that other fantastic thing about this podcast is Rob, whose voice sounds like a relaxation tape, and he is really this generally that nice and speaks so lovely to you and listens and is supportive of ideas and things like that. So Rob, all I can say is thank you to that. But then there's two other voices who have become great allies and pals of mine. Kate, who I was reviewing the Darth Vader comics, started doing little dramatisations in them. Dr. Aphra, a fantastic female character, comes in, and all of a sudden I've got the sexiest voice Dr. Aphra anyone could wish for in Kate, who just shares this amazing sense of fun and humour. And then Lex, you're just so cool. It's just, yeah, I just love hearing you chat and talk and your ideas and your concepts. You're all marvellous people, and it's been great being part of the show for this last year. So cheers all, you know, may the force be with you, Alonzi, to Nick Lex's phrase. Have I got one of my own? I don't think I have. But anyway, you know, eh? See you around.
Speaking to the Who Wars listeners is like speaking to the stars themselves, and they'll probably never love you back. But I know what they'd say, you Who Wars listeners. You would say, we know. Yes, I know you know that we love you. Yes, much love to you Who Wars listeners. And continue the love of Doctor Who and Star Wars for the rest of us. The conversation shall continue. It shall carry on forever. To the very far reaches of the galaxy. Yeah, I know, I stopped. Some real advice, though. Keep reading your comics. Keep watching Doctor Who. Keep rewatching the Star Wars films. And keep talking to us. All right. Carry on, everybody. I guess that's it. Good night, all. Good night, Who Wars.